The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Thank you for those who are following instructions. So this session is on hospitality, and I was going to introduce it and then have Brian Lynch with Veritas in Newburgh, Oregon, who has been my tutor on this. It's kind of an odd turn of events, and then and I'll tell you about that in a second. And then Davies Owens is also going to join us and ask some questions. We'll go back and forth and maybe take questions from all of you as well. The story here started out, I don't know, a couple, three, 4 years ago. If I get it right, we'll be lucky. If not, I'm sure Brian will correct me. But we were at an event together, and Brian asked me a question, as I recall, about, you know, school ethos. And I said, well, you know, hospitality is something that's important. And he said, well, where do you learn that kind of thing? And I said, you know, that's a good question. It's at least the way I recall it anyways. And it's a good question. When I worked in the business world, they had people come in and train us who were in the hospitality industry. And it was kind of good training. Now, I worked, of course, in a technology sector, so we were way outside of the hospitality industry. But they have some very good ideas on how to make people feel welcome, even when you're telling them things that they don't want to hear. And so he went, this is the way the Lord works. He gives guys like me ideas, and he gives guys like Brian the wisdom to go check them out. And so Brian went out and found a great book on hospitality, and he's going to talk about that here in a little bit. I'll just introduce it by saying the principle we're talking about here is sort of, I think Doug Wilson in the early years of the movement called this the aroma of your school. How your school not literally smells, but figuratively smells. Just like when you walk into somebody's house that isn't yours, you notice the smells that they don't notice because it's their house. Hospitality contributes to the good aroma of a school. And so it's something easy to do on the marketing side. You know, you can get a lot of people in through your doors. But what you really want to do is have those who come visit your school stay and become students. And so this is one way to help do that. So without belaboring the point any further, I will have Brian talk a little bit about the book and what the training is that he does with his students, or I'm sorry, with his staff.
Thank you, David. My name is Brian Lynch. I'm headmaster at Veritas School in Newburgh, Oregon. So welcome this morning. I just want to make sure that we're clear. We came to this out of a position of weakness, not like, you know, we had it all and still don't have it all together, and I'm going to tell you how to improve your customer service. What I'd like to do, though, is just point out a couple of resources that we've used that we've found really, really helpful. So that's really my task today. And I wanted to start just reminding you of some very, I think we would call epic customer service failures, of people being dragged off airplanes, threatened with federal crimes if they don't give up their seat on an airplane, that kind of thing. I think those are epic because they're culturally defining, right? Or at least they go viral, so that makes them epic. So you see that kind of thing, and you think, well, that couldn't happen on Alaska, right? Or probably doesn't happen, or Southwest. Can you imagine that happening? And certainly we can't imagine that kind of thing happening in our schools. But at the same time, we think about how can we do better at customer service? How can we improve? And more than that, what we were interested in was improving our understanding of community, a reality of community. It's not just customer service, but actually hospitality, showing hospitality, and really developing a stronger school community. So that's where we got started thinking about this a couple of years ago. And so we were at a regional conference, administrators conference, and I asked David about that, and that's when he, much more confidently, by the way, than he said it here, he said, oh, yeah, no, go, hospitality, that's the way to do it. So we went out, or I went out, and I read a couple of books highly recommended, and I would recommend these to you. And the first one is called Be Our Guest. So we've used two main resources. The first one, Be Our Guest. Anybody read this? This is the Disney Institute book. Anybody read that? And Disney, if you've ever been to Disneyland or the Disney venues, you know they have this hospitality process down. And so I picked up this book, highly recommended, and I thought, to be honest, it would be a little, you know, Mickey Mouse, right? That's Disney, okay. But it's really, really good. And so it was very, 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 very valuable for us, and I'll just mention a couple of things here. What we're looking for, and I think what we're all looking for, is not just satisfied customers, right? The satisfied customer will be satisfied, but they can go somewhere else. What we want is those enthusiastic promoters, those people that love your school, love your community, and want to be a part of it and promote it to others. So how do we develop that? And in the Disney world, in this Be Our Guest, they have a couple of principles. Sorry, pardon me while I find my place here. The first one is this attitude of exceeding guests' expectations. Again, we're transferring from the entertainment world, you know, the amusement industry to schools. But to some degree, we can transfer these things over as well. Exceeding guests' expectations, and how do we do that? The second thing for them was consistency in staff, that is hiring and training, the setting, the actual facilities and process. So staff, setting, and process, those procedures and policies. And knowing what those things are and being very, very consistent with them. And so that this was, again, I think two and a half years ago, really got us thinking about that, and we started developing some training materials around that for our people, because we wanted to be welcoming and hospitable, right? If anyone should be interested in hospitality, it should be Christians and Christian schools and having a strong community. But our yearly parent surveys, we have a question kind of around those customer service kinds of things, and they were coming back in the, you know, not so enthusiastic range. Not terrible, but you know, we're getting a B in hospitality. How can that be? We're a Christian school. And I think part of it was just us being conscious about what it is we're trying to do. And again, what we're not talking about is the customer is always right. It's not that. But it's having that attitude of how do we welcome, how do we make sure our setting looks good, our procedures and our policies support that. So that was a really interesting book for us, and we started working through that 2 years ago. This past summer, I came across a book called Setting the Table by Danny Myers. Anybody read that? Setting the Table, okay. And I came across this listening to the radio. I live in Newburgh, Portland area, and there were a couple of craft brewery guys on the radio talking about their breweries. And they mentioned Danny Myers. They said, I read all of Danny Myers' stuff. He's a restaurant developer in New York City. Shake Shack, anybody familiar with Shake Shack? That's one of Danny Myers' things. He's a high-end restaurant guy, has also gone into this. And so they were mentioning this book called Setting the Table. And so I got it and read it, and it is outstanding. Now, we'll just have put out a caveat here. It's a secular book. And I've told David this because I've sent him, you know, I promoted the book to David, but it is secular. He uses at least one profanity in an anecdote. There's some liberal political and social things in there. So you might be shocked to hear that Brian Lynch from Veritas recommends this. So I'm just saying, you know that. I wouldn't just buy cases of this and hand it out to everybody. Read it first and see what you think about it. But there's some really, really good things in there. And by the way, you can email me if you want a study guide for that if you're interested. Email me and I can send that to you, that I've put together that we're working through with our office staff, our administrative staff right now. How's my time? I got 2 minutes, right? Yeah, okay, I'll be fast.
Well, so, you're paused, though.
Yeah.
For those of you
little later this week, we'll talk about the Member Resource Center, and so I've turned your study guide into a Member Resource Center document that's available out there for all the schools. So
yeah, so feel free to use that as it's helpful. So there are three key principles from Danny Meyer's book that we found very, very helpful. So taking sort of the Disney stuff and processes and you know, conversation kinds of things and setting inventories, all of that. But then these three were very, very powerful for us in our conversations as a whole staff. So the first one is that hospitality is different from service. Hospitality is not the same thing. He says a good service is something that happens to you. Hospitality is something that happens for you. You have to have both. You need to have both great service, that is technical execution, but also how is this making the customer, the person in your community feel about that? And so we need to consider both these. I'd like to just read a brief quotation from Myers. He writes, service is the technical delivery of a product. Hospitality is how the delivery of that product makes its recipient feel. Service is a monologue. We decide what we want to, how we want to do things and set our own standards for service. Hospitality, on the other hand, is a dialogue. To be on a guest side requires listening to that person with every sense and following up with thoughtful, gracious, and appropriate response. So both service and hospitality. So again, we talk a lot about that attitude, that approach. Second principle is we should be striving to be agents, not gatekeepers. Agents, not gatekeepers. And by that, he means looking for ways to assist people to get the things that they need, to do what we can. Not that the customer is always right. We don't set aside policy. But within our policies, how do we help? And rather than being defensive, and I think this was one of our problems that was showing up on this parent survey, is we had policies, which you need, but we tended to be a little defensive about it if it clashed with what a parent wanted. They wanted to, you know, withdraw in October with no fees or something, right? Just leave. And we said, well, no, our policy is this, and feeling defensive about having to defend our appropriate policies. So what we had to do is switch our mentality a little bit. While supporting and keeping the policies, how can we be an agent? Now, we're talking about gatekeeping. I'm not talking about admissions gatekeeping. That's a different thing. But how could we help if we can't say you are a restaurant and someone wants a reservation and you don't have a place for them? You can't just make up a table, right? But can you put them on the wait list? Can you call them? Can you find another restaurant? You know, is there a way to be an agent for them and not just defensive about your policies? So that's just an attitude, and it's looking for ways to help rather than defending all the time. And I think that's a mental shift that we've gone through. I think it's helped us a lot. The third principle is that of being on the lookout to write a great last chapter. When things go wrong, which they inevitably will, right? There's always an issue. And the story is told of the thing that went wrong. Even if it's not our fault, if something happens in the school, a parent is unhappy, and they're going to tell the story to everybody, right, probably. They're going to love to tell the story. We love to do that when the things go wrong in the restaurant or on the airplane, right? We tell the story over and over again. So what we're trying to think about is how can we add to that story at the end and so that there's a great last chapter. So here's the story of the failure, whatever it was. How do we add something at the end that will, when they tell that story, make it a little bit better? And actually genuinely serve them, at the same time, make that story sound better. So, example might be someone who was given the impression, or said they were given the impression that there was a spot in the kindergarten, and there's not, and they turn out to be in the wait pool. Right, so that's the story they're now going to tell. We went to Veritas, they told us we had a spot, and then they denied us, and you know, it's a bad story. How can we write a great last chapter to that? Can we put them at the top of a list? Because we don't have wait lists, we have wait pools, but can we make a list, put them at the top, tell them they're first? Can we refund their application fee? Can we, is there something else we can do to maybe we can open a spot, but if we can't, can we at least make that effort to make that better for them at the end. So we discuss these principles frequently with our staff at our monthly staff meetings, faculty meetings, asking for examples around campus, but also when they're out and about, traveling or in stores or whatever, and just keeping those ideas at the forefront. How do we act as agents and not gatekeepers? How do we write great last chapters? And I'm happy to report that our most recent parent survey, we've seen significant uptick in that hospitality, customer service question. Now, we have room to grow, and we'll continue to work our way through these things. But those principles, just focusing on it, being conscious of it, making it a part of our daily and monthly routine, I think has been very, very valuable for us. I think that's my
thing.
What's
that?
Is that it?
No, do you have more points?
I don't. I'm fine right there. I can stop.
Great. Davey's just going to come out, and we'll do some Q&A. When I read Brian's study guide, I think the most impactful point, you know, when you come to these conferences, you got to take one thing away. And I think that the one thing I'd want to take away from what Brian talks about in the study guide, which, like I said, is on the MRC, it's available in our library there. It's a ACCS brief now is what we've done with it. And it's got a lot more detail than what he had. But the one takeaway I would suggest is the idea of agency versus gatekeeper. And I see this a lot because when you're in the front office of a school, you get a lot of people wanting things. Everything from where'd my son's shoes go? They were left on the playground last night. To why did my daughter get a D in math, or how come the teacher is such a terrible, awful, no good person, right? I mean, you get all of this range of vitriol that comes out, and being able to be there, to be an agent means you're working with them to solve the problem. It's not, well, our policy says this. You know, our policy is that anything left on the playground overnight is thrown in the dumpster. That is not, and I'm being obviously using a lot of hyperbole here, but the idea is, okay, let's see how we, just the words you use, how we can solve this, you know, with them. Using words like, I'm going to, you know, we can get this resolved, we just have to find the right person. Joining with them in their problem and helping work through the problem with them so that you're standing alongside them, you're not the face in the, you know, there's this wall between you and them that starts at the counter, the service counter, right? Even body language, walking out from behind that counter when you know you've got somebody with some serious emotional issues and standing beside them instead of behind the counter and talking to them. Being one of the principles that believe it, I know this is difficult because when you don't explain the term, it can sound harsh. But we used to have this phrase when I worked in the tech industry that policies are poison, because what policies do is they dehumanize. Now principles are essential. If you don't have principles, you don't have an organization. You have a free for all. But policies are written to support principles, and if the policy that you're dealing with doesn't actually, you know, it's not necessary that that things left on the playground overnight will be discarded. It's a principle that a lot of stuff gets left on the playground, and we don't want to be responsible for it. Because it's not our, you know, as a school, we can't be responsible for everything. I'm purposely using something rather inane and silly and small, but you get the point. There's a principle there. We don't want to dedicate resources to picking up the playground every night when we could be dedicating those resources to grading papers or doing something like that. But the policy that we, you know, throw things away isn't really that's a poison, right? It just hurts things. So avoid policies policies in organizations I've worked in can oftentimes be like rabbits. They multiply because you always create a new one for the last problem you had. And too many policies in school get kind of crazy, and it drives your parents nuts. So the example I would give, and then I'll turn it over for questions, but when I first got involved at the school, I was in the business world, and I came out of the tech industry, so I was an analyst, and I thought the best way to run a school is to have systems for everything. And, gee, the software we had a place for demerits, and so I started a whole system of demerits. Boy, was it complicated and dehumanizing. I'm not a big fan of demerits after running a school for a number of years, because the principle we're trying to get to is we are brothers and sisters in Christ, and we're discipling these students to love the good. The policies that you build for demerits don't really support that idea. So
I was thinking, I'm going to give some questions to you guys, and then we'll open it up a bit. I was thinking about just how do we frame up this whole topic of hospitality, and one aspect of it, as you talked about, Brian, is really the environment. And I think before we even engage ourselves as staff, what does the physical environment say about what message, what ethos are we putting out there in front of our people? And I think this may look like things as simple as, and this would be a great exercise if you go visit another school, or imagine someone has been enamored with your school online, and they get to your school, and they spend 10 minutes, and they can't find anywhere to park. So the very first thing you've expressed to them is that we're not really that welcoming. We're actually dealing with that right now. We have two visitor places. We're like, this summer we're going to make it 6 with big signs, and hopefully our parents won't park there so the visitors can park there. And then when you get in the door, is it one of those like, well, we're a secure school, so it took 10 more minutes to get through because no one was paying attention. We buzzed the thing, and it didn't happen. We finally got in, and then the person was on the phone, and they didn't really notice you. Like, what are the things that we're creating environmentally as we come into the building? I remember the first time I went to the Ambrose School, and I was so excited about being at the Ambrose School. I walked in, and this is, if you've ever been, this beautiful vaulted front entry, and this in gold letters, take every thought captive to Christ, and then my eyes immediately went to the lost and found cart that's parked right there. David remembers this, and it was just like, wow, like everything is sort of tainted by the water bottles and the old shoes that are sitting right here. So did that send the message we wanted to send? And I just wonder, comments from you guys on how do we do a better job of creating environment? I know that Disney trains every Disney employee to do what they call the Disney 360, and they literally they'll stand in one place in the middle of Magic Kingdom and just walk around, cigarette butt, trash on the ground, water fountain's not working, and they make sure that everything environmentally is making sense. And we don't see it because the odor is maybe not. What do you think, David?
I wish I'd removed the cart before you got
it's
there.
It's now gone.
what I've encouraged headmasters, anybody who's in the admissions department of schools, to do is just go outside, stop, take a deep breath facing away from the school, try and clear your mind and think, okay, I'm a person who's never been here before. I'm going to try and be that person, right? Then turn around and walk back in and see what you notice and see if you can pay attention to it. And the other point I've sometimes said is, if you've got a marketing budget of $5,000 a year or whatever it is, spend $800 or $900 on your front office or your front entryway, right? Or more. Put some money into that front entry area, because pretty much the reason it said take every thought captive to Christ is that when we built the building, we realized people were coming in and thinking it was some, they were reading all kinds of things into the building, ostentatious, a church, all kinds of things. So we wanted to control their thinking as soon as they walked in the door. So that's my two bits of it.
Just really quick, one of the things we did as a result of that Disney book is create what we call a setting inventory. And it just has all our classrooms and all the public spaces, and it's like two side, you know, front and back side. And we've occasionally asked parents, because as staff we see it all the time, so we don't really see it anymore. It's just part of our environment. So we've asked parents to take one of these and just walk around and check it off and write comments and get it back to us. And that's been helpful to help us see those things that we don't see, because we're in modular buildings. On land behind the church, or we're actually moving the buildings this week. I happen to be here, so I'm not sure how that worked out. But that's been really good to see that those people are not part of us taking a look at our campus and getting feedback that way.
So clearly environment's part of it. I guess the crux of what I want to ask some questions, and we'll again open it up, I think is around it's getting your people to really own the same value that you want for the school. And I hopefully in future years we'll get Woody Falk, who is one of our friends. He was the head of our board in Atlanta when I was headmaster. He's the vice president at Chick-fil-A. And he's often said, look, anybody can do a chicken sandwich. I don't know if Chick-fil-A would agree with that, but that's what he said. Anybody can do a chicken sandwich, but not everyone can do customer service. So I think it's fascinating to go to a Chick-fil-A and the 18-year-old behind the counter who probably is not really naturally this way says, my pleasure. Like, how do you get that kind of training embedded into your people where they exude the very thing that you represent? And I know Chick-fil-A was very much influenced by Horst. If you look up Horst Schulze, who is one of the founders of the Ritz-Carlton Corporation, Horst did an amazing transformation of the hotel industry 3 decades ago, where he basically said, we're going to just rethink this around our customer base. And I remember a story of back in the early days, he literally said to every employee, like the lady, you know, the cleaning staff anybody in the building, you have $1,000 discretionary fund. So if you see one of our guests that is in need of something, you solve that problem. And there's a story, I guess, of a woman who's coming in to clean a hotel room, and a businessman had left a laptop there in the room. She grabbed the laptop. She went down and figured out who he was, figured out where he was going. This is the story. It's hard to believe, but she literally grabbed a taxi, went to the airport, jumped on the plane, went to this other city, met him, and went, here's your laptop. And she had full empowerment by the organization to solve that problem. And I think that kind of radical thinking, how do we do that in our schools? How do we get our minds of our teachers and our volunteers to say, wait a minute, there's a guest that just walked in this property. How do we make them feel at home? How do we solve this problem of this parent whose child's having a meltdown? And what do we do? How do we give them that that's who we are, and you have the resources at your disposal to do it? So I don't know if we got $1,000 per employee to solve left your laptop kind of problem, but what are you doing in that vein to just say, be empowered to share this vision? Kind of specifics. You guys.
Well, I think it starts with hiring. Because I don't think you can take someone who is, you know, not predisposed already, be helpful, and turn them into that right. employee. So, but you've got the people that you have in place now. So I think one of the things we've seen is just consciously making it a part of our discussion. And the reason why, again, as Christian, there's a good biblical reason why we want to be hospitable. It's not just fill seats in the classroom. It's really offering true biblical hospitality to everybody who comes in. So I think starting with why and talking about it frequently, looking again at examples, and then having, you know, some just for us just basic training materials. How do you answer the phone? How do you respond to questions? You know, those kinds of things. So again, we're like 2.5 years into it, so I'm not the expert on it. I'm sure there are people, you know, doing great things. I'd love to hear from them. But that's, I think, training is key, just making a part of what we do. But also, as we're hiring, we're more and more thinking about what are the kinds of people that are going to do this naturally, and then we give them the tools to do it.
And some of it does become, you know, David, you made a good comment about policy can kill you, but some policies I think are important. I know one of our, I felt like I worked for Chick-fil-A, but one of our policies at their school in Atlanta was, no one should call during normal operating hours of the school and get a recording. Like, that is not acceptable. A human being should answer the phone. So we went through all kinds of gyrations during the lunch hour to make sure somebody answered the phone after the third or fourth ring. And that seems pretty reasonable. I mean, it doesn't feel great if you're a parent, you're trying to get the shoes to your kid, and no one is answering the phone. So those are just practical.
Another thing I would recommend is set up your evaluation process with your front office staff that starts with, what is your job? And it needs to be to something like to serve the parents or the families of the school. That needs to be the first thing out of their mouth. You know, how many people in here are fans of Amazon? You buy stuff, you know. What you would think their mission would be something like sell everything under the sun, but it's to be the most customer-centric company in the world. That's what their goal is. And so I think, you know, when we look at what the front office of our schools looks like, oftentimes we think of gee, is it efficient? Do we have, is it neat and tidy? Do we have enough copies being made? Is the coffee warm? That kind of thing. Get your staff to be single-minded that service is their job. That's what they do, is they serve those who come through that door, and they thrill them.
Okay. So open it up. Questions or comments or best practices that you'd like to share? Yeah.
I'm just so thrilled at this this workshop. I mean, all this is so critically important. Two thoughts. One, I love the example of the Ritz-Carlton. One of the things they do is the lineup, where every shift of every employee at the Ritz-Carlton, whether you're housekeeping or front office or whatever, part of the beginning of that shift is they line up and they read stories of exemplary hospitality from throughout the brand.
Oh, that's great.
So that's another key to their success. Secondly, it's so fortuitous we're here. My wife and I came out last night from the other side of the state. We listened to an amazing podcast yesterday about hospitality that will make you feel uncomfortable, frankly. But for those of us who are from a Reformed Protestant perspective, this is with, what is her name? Rosaria Butterfield, who wrote a great book, interesting story of conversion herself. It's the Mortification of Spin podcast with Carl Truman, and she talks about radical hospitality. We loved it, and it may be helpful for you.
So that's Rosaria Butterfield, right? And what was the title of it? The Mortification of Spin. Nice thing about the internet is all you have is a few words. You can search it, and you'll find it.
Right? All right.
You don't even have to go buy the book.
Questions or comments?
Other ideas that you may have that is in this arena of hospitality within your schools?
My name's Kennedy Enriquez. We're here in Pittsburgh at Trinity Christian School. And one of the things that we've been doing is we have these wonderful moms who they do hospitality beautiful. Like, it's just over the top. So, I mean, I get excited when I know there's an event because I know I'm going to get some kind of thing that's going to bless both my eyes and my taste buds and kind of increase my waist, too. But that we have a new family kind of event at the start of the year before we have the orientations, that kind of information blow them away. So we have them come, we have games out, we have parents there that know Trinity, so they engage them and kind of help them know the back door to do that. And we found that to be helpful. We, quite frankly, we feel like we need to do more of that, but that's been really helpful.
As a testimonial, I can attest that Trinity is very hospitable because if you see all the stuff around here, it was stored in their facility. Thank you very much for that. They helped us out.
Okay. Other? Yeah.
So, bless one to the program about introducing mentor families to new families. We've done that, and it's been really tremendous. They have a connection point, new families coming in, like, so what do we do for the harvest party? What should we expect for a Christmas concert? It's really helpful. Question, so square footage is at a premium, especially for those of us that lease spaces. We know every square foot we add, we're adding operational dollars. I'm curious if anyone here, or Brian, or David, or Davies, if you're able to talk about prioritization of space for hospitality. I think Ambrose maybe has a parent room, or I've heard some schools have parent spaces. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, just thinking about that, I know schools, David, you're talking about sort of the tension of, do you make copies, you know, for the front office, or you, I think if you could have the opportunity to design the optimal environment, it would be when you walk in, there's actually kind of a reception area. I know, like, the Providence School in Dallas has the facility they're in lends itself. You feel like you're walking into a hotel and there's clearly a reception area and there are volunteers back there and they're totally focused on greeting that guest. And then the administrative team is behind doors and they're running the school. And that's the difficulty in a small space where you've asked that double role to happen, which is probably pretty common. Ambrose does have, when you walk in on the left, again, the beauty, if you ever have a chance to build a building, I'd encourage you to think about this. It's actually, we kind of, it looks a bit like an English pub and Starbucks mix. There's a, you know, fireplace and a big overstuffed couches in there. And the idea is, yeah, we do want to be in loco parentis. We want the parents and local pastors or whoever just to come be in this environment that's sort of on the front end of the school. So it's before you get back into the classroom area. But that, again, I think sends a positive message of hospitality. So other questions, comments, best practices? Yeah.
Thanks. I'm Quentin Johnston from Whitfield Academy in Kansas City. One of the things that we've talked about a lot, actually having read a couple of years ago the same book by Disney, we talk a lot about the difference between customer experience and customer service. How I explain it is that if you go to a restaurant, you get a decent meal, you get indifferent service, you're overcharged, and the place is dirty, but your service has at least been on time. Well, you've had decent customer service, but you've had a horrible customer experience. You'll never go back. And so we talk a lot about that to our faculty and to our staff especially about doing what they can to create an atmosphere of care and love. And so anything that they're doing, anything that our staff are doing at the front office is immediately secondary to whatever the need is that is presented to them. And in the last 4 years that I've been there, especially the last 2 years as we've been emphasizing this, we've heard an awful lot more positives from our parents about the fact that they love coming into the school. In fact, in our annual survey, that's one of the things that we actually survey very carefully. You know, how long they're on the phone, do they get their questions answered, what's it like for them? And we talk a lot about that, and I think it's made a difference to the friendliness and the culture within the school.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how we almost have to be super prescriptive with that experience thing in mind. We assume everybody thinks like we do. I remember we had some teachers that at the end, even simple things like the way the parent communication goes out each week, like a grammar school teacher every Friday at our school sends out just kind of a weekly summary. And if we don't sort of define that, it can become, you know, tediously too long. Or I remember we had some teachers that were putting like their favorite sports teams cheers at the end. And it's like, that's not really the point. Like, so you have to prescribe and frequency. How often do we communicate? And if somebody, a parent emails us or calls us, what's our expectation? Is it sometime in the next week you might want to get back, or is it that same day? I think it creates an atmosphere. So I don't know if you guys have other
thoughts. Well, I was going to comment on communications. I think a big part of hospitality is the dangerous electronic world that we live in. We're very busy in offices at schools because as private schools, we're understaffed almost universally in the front office. And so when we get the fourth complaint that somebody is parked in the pass-through lane out front, we get on the electronic communication and say, you know, do not park in the white zone in the front of the building. Instead of, could you help us out? We've been having, you know, so it's how you communicate. I think that goes without saying, but the question is, we always fall into the sort of frenetic, just get the communication out as quickly as possible. And I think really it's just an attitudinal shift, like I was saying about the front office. You have to have this attitude that we're one family here, help us out, you know, treat it like it's a conversation, not like an order being sent out.
You know, I think the inherent, maybe this is a setup to a question. I mean, the inherent difficulty in our business model, unlike Disney, where you get, generally speaking, happy people on vacation for a week and then they go away, we have at least 13 years, if you just have one child, with our customers, and we're not dealing with Dumbo and Mickey Mouse. We're dealing with their faith and their money and their children. I mean, like, could we pick a more volatile industry to be in? So I guess that's the question. I mean, I envy the Disney people because it's like, sorry you didn't like your ice cream melted too fast, you know, whatever. But this is serious stuff we're dealing with. And so we've talked about kind of, I'm just thinking three phases. Phase one is the visitor. Yes, I found a nice spot. and we had a really wonderful open house, and you call me back. Like, those seems like I think we're probably more attentive to that first phase. The second phase is, oh, wow, we've got 13 years together. Like, how do we do life together? How do we call each other back? How do we ask forgiveness when we need to? And maybe even a third phase is, how do we end well? And I don't know that we've probably put much attention around that. I know a lot of times, you know, unfortunately in our business, there's a certain attrition rate for whatever reason. It seems to be more common these days of millennials. They don't like whatever they leave. How do we end well? Do we do an exit interview? Do we call them? I mean, or do we just say good riddance, go away? And then they go out and they do the Google review thing and we all regret that. So how do we do this whole process well? So.
Well, I really liked what the gentleman said about the stories. I think if I were to take anything away from here in addition, it would be get one of these books, go to the MRC and get the study guide. Make this an annual part of your training for both teachers and front office staff. Make it a focus of the organization. It'll pay back.
Yeah. So we've got about 5 minutes. Comments?
Hi, I'm Margaret. My husband's the headmaster in Washington State at the Oaks. And one thing that our first headmaster, Bruce Williams, started is he just stood outside every single morning to greet every student and every family, and he'd make it a point to know everyone's name, which is hard to do. And maybe other schools do this, but Charlie wanted to continue that tradition. So it's really, now our son is in first grade, so it's really comforting to just be able to greet daddy every day, first of all, but I think also for parents to just see their leaders right there and be able to say hi to them and know who they are and have kids know who they are. So that's been a neat tradition.
Thanks for making that's a great point. I know parents will sometimes think, what do you administrators do all day? But if they see you in the carpool line for all of 2 seconds opening a door and saying hello, then you're on duty and you've done an amazing job all day. So that's a great point. Be visible in those critical points in the day. Good. Other? Yep.
Hi, I'm Erica Spivey with Cary Christian School in Cary, North Carolina. And one thing I read actually in a recent marketing book that we're going to try to implement this year is we're seeking to launch a parent ambassador program to help us build community at school, is they were talking about in the Mormon faith, when you have two visitors that go out to on visitation and they invite a family in, and then when that family comes to their place of worship, they make sure that they're connecting those people, the visitors, with people that are at the church, so the next time they have a visitor, they take one of the two that went originally and a new person, so you're spreading out this networking. And so we're going to try to take that idea and make sure that when new families are coming in, that they've maybe met that first family at their new family gathering, where they have that champion family that's kind of hand-holding them through the process, but making those introductions. And then maybe that happens at a sporting event or some other thing, but, you know, helping tie them into the body at school. And then another thing that it sounds really stupid probably and silly, but just that friendly smile when parents and people are coming into the school. My job is marketing and communications, if I didn't say that already, but just taking the moment to greet them and introduce yourself, especially if you don't know them, that friendly smile, how are you doing? If they're coming back for an interview after they've toured the school and doing admissions, maybe touching base with the administrative assistants and knowing who's on the slate that day, right, to come in and visit them. That way you can call them by name. I'm saying all these things because these are things I'm thinking I need to do this better. Not that I do them, but I just think those are little things, right, that can be exceeding those expectations and making them feel important, that customer experience.
That reminds me, I know one tradition I've been a part of, and I'm looking at Chris Brown, who's our upper school dean, and that is simply writing a birthday card to every student. You'd be amazed at what is, you know, you get your administrative team just to pre-fill the, what we would do is pre-fill the name on the front, and then where the stamp goes, you put the birth date, so you kind of know when it's coming up. You get about a week ahead of it. Simple, happy birthday. It takes you, what, 10 seconds to write a, maybe Chris writes a longer one, but the parents will remember this for years. Like, you took time to write my child, and so it just reinforces both to the student and to the parent, we do care and we are paying attention. Hopefully we're doing it for the good reasons, not just to get a check. But all right, comments, questions? Got a couple minutes. David, Brian, yeah. Okay, and I'll go over here.
While he's going over there, just one of the things that I like about the discussion about hospitality is we really want to focus on our community, not a customer commodity kind of relationship. So it's not customer service and the customer's right and they get a commodity and we exchange money, and we really want to move to that hospitality community feel. So that's a bigger level, but I think it's important that we talk about that with our staff as well.
Good morning. My name is Angela Fisher, and I'm from Redeemer Classical Christian School in Baltimore. And my question really speaks to that community aspect. I feel like our school is very welcoming. All of our staff and faculty are very welcoming, especially to new families. What I'm wondering from you all is, how do we convince families to come to those occasions when we can exude our hospitality on them? You know, we have 161 families, and we might get the same 30 to 40 families coming to the same events. Parents seem to be disengaged for some reason. Maybe they're busy, maybe they're not interested, maybe they're just leaving it up to their kids to figure it out, but we want to find a way to make them want to be part of the community.
I think one of the things I learned was that parents actually do come to the school more than you think. They just don't come when you want them to. They're there for the sports games. They're there for pickup and drop off. They're there to talk to the teachers. I think the trick is to have a culture of hospitality so that it permeates. It's the idea of the aroma that we started with. All of us have trouble getting anybody to a back to school night or anything like that. It's never going to be your best time to display hospitality. The best time is when the parent is there because they need something, want something. That's your opportunity. So, back to the one takeaway I said, I think we just need to remember to treat ourselves as cooperative agents with the parents, not gatekeepers from between the school and the parents.
Well, I think we're at time, so I guess I should officially dismiss us, and we can keep conversations going in the hallways or around the coffee. Thank you for being here, and hopefully this was helpful. We'll see you around. Thank you.
Next session's at 9:10.